Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your episode for Wednesday, January 10th. We've got LaVar Ball, Pistons trade rumors, the Brooklyn Nets. We've got it all today. But you can follow me on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Follow us at the Locked On Pistons Twitter account as well. And hey, we got a Facebook page now. I converted my journalist page to one of those Facebook pages that you can like. So go ahead and do that. It's at Locked On Pistons-Matt Schoch there. A rough loss for Michigan to Purdue on Tuesday nights. It brought up something that I was thinking of some during the NBA season this year. And I don't want any more replays for out-of-bounds calls. I'm willing to accept that the refs get it wrong sometimes, as opposed to what happened there at the end of the Michigan game. Charles Matthews had the ball knocked away, and the refs ruled after a long replay that the last touch was off of him. I still haven't seen that angle that shows that they could reverse it off of something indisputable, but it gave Purdue the ball, and then they called a ticky-tack foul on Mo Wagner, who was defending the big guy on Purdue, who was catching the inbounds pass in the lane. Purdue makes one of two free throws to win the game, and I just don't like that replay ending. I think it's such a horrible, unsatisfying ending. So I think this is for the NBA, too. Just get rid of those out-of-bounds replay decisions. They usually end kind of giving the wrong team with the spirit of the play, with it gets it knocked out, and then it maybe touches the fingernail of the guy and goes out or something like that. So something I'd like changed in the college basketball and NBA world. So listeners, get on that for me and make sure that's changed as soon as possible. But we're going to be looking ahead to the Pistons game against the Brooklyn Nets tonight on Wednesday night. Also talk about some of those trade rumors that have been floating around about the Pistons with my thoughts about them. And then we're talking LaVar Ball, Amin El-Hassan versus Detroit on Twitter on Tuesday night, and all the stuff about basketball in the media that we all hate. I'll put that at the end of the podcast in case some of you guys want to skip over some of that stuff, and that would be understandable too. But fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft 2. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOPISTONS. That's right. Play in a real money draft for free just by using promo code LOPISTONS. But it gets even better. Draft's so sure that you'll love it that you're even offering a Locked On Pistons listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. So just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code L.O. Pistons. But we're talking Brooklyn Nets. By the way, it is Draft Wednesday today, so get on that draft.com app and follow me on the app at Matt Schoch, and I'll invite you into our league that we got every Wednesday. It's just a one-day thing. Pay $3 and get in, and if it's your first time in there, they'll pay for it for free. Win real money and get paid the next day. But like I said, Brooklyn Nets and Pistons for Brooklyn. It is the last game of a five-game homestand where they're currently 2-2 right now. This team is now 15-25 and far out of the Eastern Conference playoff hunt. It's kind of a hot team coming into the season in media circles, but that's only because they're finally making the right types of moves to start the rebuild, which should have started years ago, but they were kind of hamstrung with the fact that they gave away a bunch of first-round draft picks for the Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett deal with the Boston Celtics to give them a little bit of short-term success with the new Russian owner, Prokhorov. So that's obviously backfired in time. They got Sean Marks running the show from the San Antonio Spurs in there, but he's doing a pretty good job now, but it's still a long road ahead for the Brooklyn Nets. First time that the Pistons are playing them this year. The Nets are doing a good job by taking on other teams' bad contracts attached to assets, a strategy that we'll talk about later on in the podcast in our trade rumors discussion. But again, don't get it twisted. This is not a good team. They never were playoff contenders for this season, and they still have a chance at being at the bottom of the league despite not trying to lose like some of the teams that are tanking those franchises, because the Nets actually have one more year without their first-round pick, which Boston had, and that was dealt in the Kyrie Irving trade over to Cleveland. So they now have it for now, and although that could be an asset that could be on the move in the next month before the February 8th trade deadline. The best player for the Nets these days is former Pistons second-round pick Spencer Dinwiddie, who was the first pick of the Stan Van Gundy era, played with the Pistons for two seasons, and then was traded to the Bulls for Cameron Bairstow, who was then released by the Pistons, so a giveaway by Stan Van Gundy there. He was then released by the Bulls, Dinwiddie was, picked up by the Nets, who have all sorts of roster space and minutes available for G League-type players, and that's where Dinwiddie has resurrected, or actually, not resurrected, but surrected, if that's the word. That's probably not a word. But he's jump-started his career in Brooklyn with the Nets, and he scored over 20 in the last three games, including a 31-point effort on Monday and a loss to the Toronto Raptors, which the Nets played well and only lost by 1 point there. The Nets also have Caris LeVert of Michigan, a key bench player for the team. He's overcome the injuries he had in college for the University of Michigan, is now playing very well for the Nets. And now Nick Stauskas is there as well, too, playing with his former backcourt mate, Caris LeVert from Ann Arbor. He was acquired, Stauskas was acquired in the Trevor Booker trade with Philly earlier this year, and he's doing pretty well for Brooklyn now that he's getting some minutes in a low-pressure situation. Some of the best players for the Nets will not be playing. Jeremy Lin was out for the year after one game. D'Angelo Russell hasn't played much this year because of injuries. He should be back really soon, but probably not tonight against the Pistons. And Damari Carroll, their veteran leader that they picked up in a trade this offseason, he's out as well. So again, this is not a good team, but the Pistons are only favored by two, according to Vegas. And the Pistons are coming in here motivated after the loss to New Orleans. And it's really not all that tough of a stretch for the Pistons schedule-wise. So if you're of the betting type, you might want to think about a wager here. You heard it here first on Locked On Pistons. But we're going to be talking about the trade rumors that are hot these days for the Detroit Pistons. I've got some thoughts on those. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men between 18 and 44, then this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes!
Well, a big week with big news coming up for the Detroit Lions as we expect Matt Patricia to become the new head coach. So you should check out Locked On Lions with Matt Derry. Be a subscriber and listen to the NFL podcast from the Locked On Network of the Detroit Lions. So Locked On Lions with your host, Matt Derry. You know him from Detroit Radio. Give them a follow as well and listen to that podcast every day to stay up on all things Detroit Lions. But I got some thoughts on the Stan Van Gundy / ESPN / Amin El Hassan / Rick Carlisle / LeVar Ball, all that good stuff. I got some thoughts on that as well. Also wanted to mention that the tip time for Pistons Nets tonight, Wednesday night, is 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, and wanted to remind you guys of that, so no need to rush out for the game or rush home for that one tonight. It is a little bit later start than we are accustomed to in Detroit. And the Pistons will then play at Chicago on Saturday night, my birthday, and then home against Charlotte on Martin Luther King Day, as the Pistons will be celebrating with a 12:30 p.m. daytime tip there, and then hitting the road on Wednesday for the Toronto Raptors, who have been basically unbeatable at home as of late. So it'll be important for the Pistons to get at least a couple of wins over these next three games. But coming up soon, February 8th to be exact, is the NBA trade deadline. So the Pistons are one of the hot teams being talked about over these last couple days. Monday, Adrian Wojnarowski, the top reporter for the NBA and the ESPN.com ace reporter for the NBA, he said on Monday that the Pistons were sniffing around about Evan Fournier of the Orlando Magic, and it's nice to see Stan Van Gundy talking to former Pistons friend John Hammond down there, by the way. But also, Woj said that SVG and the Pistons have been looking one of the more active teams, really, in the trade market as they're trying to win now. But it's another reason why you should probably have some separation between the coaching staff and the front office, unlike how the Pistons have Van Gundy in charge of both. As all could be Stan Van Gundy trying to save his regime with a playoff season this year, possibly jeopardizing the future to get there. The hot rumor on Tuesday came from Mark Stein of the New York Times, and he confirmed the rumor was confirmed by the Chicago Tribune's Casey Johnson that the Pistons are inquiring about Nikola Mirotic of the Bulls, who was a sure bet to be traded as he's playing well for a team that's in full rebuild mode, and he should be able to attract a nice asset for Chicago sometime in these next few weeks. Plus, there was that fight between Mirotic and Bobby Portis right before the season started. It seems glossed over now, and it seems like those guys talked it out. And the Bulls actually played really well for a span there, but the writing has been kind of on the wall for a while that Nico isn't long for the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are said to be looking for a first-round pick in return for Nico, but the big Serbian, who has also represented Spain internationally, and the Utah Jazz, by the way, are also rumored to be in the mix for his services. Mirotić would be a good get for the Pistons. He's basically a better version of what John Luer was supposed to be. He started his career as a pretty good three-point shooter for his second season for the Bulls, but hasn't lived up to that in recent seasons until this year. And since he broke his face from that Portis fight, he's come back, and he's been great. But he's helped the team win a bunch of games as their leading scorer. I've covered a lot of the Bulls in these last couple of years, and he's a better rebounder and defender than he's given credit for, even though he's tagged as a slow-footed and soft European guy. But this year, like I said, he's only played 17 games, but he's kind of he's got a little bit more grit than that, and he's got that 46.5% from three-point land so far this year. He's just been outstanding. He's under contract for another year, but if the Bulls trade him, they're probably going to have to pick up the option for his second year before trading him. But the problem is the Pistons' first-round pick is probably just a little bit too much to give up for him, even though I will caution that the pick for the Pistons for next year in the late teens, it isn't really a great one. It isn't really a great asset maybe that it would have been for a pick in last year's draft at that time, especially for this team, the Pistons. There isn't another John Collins that's going to be available in the late teens this year. Next year's draft, it's really, really good for the top six players. You got DeAndre Ayton, you got Mo Bamba, Luka Doncic, you got Trae Young, Marvin Bagley, Michael Porter Jr. Those six guys, in some kind of order, make up a very good elite level of the draft. But then there's a big drop-off to a group that includes two of the Michigan State guys with Jaren Jackson and Miles Bridges, and it quickly kind of turns into a crapshoot of unheralded prospects after that. So, long story short, Mirotić would be a better player than whatever the Pistons could get in that pick with the late teens, but the cheaper contracts figure that the rookie will have under his rookie deal for the first few seasons, and the rolling of the dice that you might get a better player out of that pick in the long run would make that asset more valuable than what Nico is right now. If that's what the deal ends up being, if it's Mirotić for a first-round pick straight up, that's an indication that Stan is trying to save his job, and it's a bad move, and we'll see how that goes. But the problem is, if you want Mirotić and the Bulls want that first-round pick, how do you balance it out? Because if you attach a salary dump, say Boban's remaining 2 years and about $14 million there or something like that, then it's way too lopsided on the other side, and the Bulls are getting screwed out of the deal. Now, tough to move some of the big dollar figures that the Pistons have with Reggie and John Luer, Reggie Jackson, because those contracts can't be dumped right now because those guys are hurt. And Langston Galloway's three-year deal with $21 million on that contract that was signed this past offseason, inexplicably, that's even tougher to deal than Boban's deal of 2 years, $14 million left on that right now, which was with the way that Langston had been used sparingly over these past few weeks. Now you got Kennard and Stanley Johnson. Those two guys are too attractive of assets to acquire Nico, so you don't really want to do that right now, move those guys if you're getting something of just Nico Mirotić's quality. But then you got Tobias and Drummond. Those guys are probably the only untouchables on the roster at this point, unless you're making a huge facelift to your team. So it's hard to see how this deal gets done unless you throw in maybe like a Henry Ellenson and they throw in another asset to balance that out. And maybe that's how these things work out in the end. You start with the two assets that each team wants and then rework it to make it more balanced and fit under the salary situations for both teams. But the Bulls would have to, first of all, pick up that option of next year for Nico to make that work. And if you've got 2 years and $13 million per season, it's going to be tough for the Pistons, who are pretty much already maxed out at this point anyway. You might have to get a third team involved and move some other assets around, so it could get tough. But the other one, Evan Fournier of the Magic, he makes $17 million a year for two more seasons after this one, and he has a player option for another year after that. It's a big investment, but at least with that kind of number, you might be able to attach a salary to the first round pick that they would have to give up for to get Fournier's big contract number over in Detroit. Maybe the Boban deal for the and the first gets that done for Fournier. But now you've weakened an already weak backup center mix if you move Boban too, so you're kind of filling that wing hole that you have at small forward, but you still have the problems at backup center, which become bigger if Boban's gone. And then you still haven't replaced the injured Reggie Jackson, so you might have some point guard depth issue as well. So you might want to make that kind of deal in the short term to shore that up. So if you're giving up a future asset for for something like that, and you still have those backup center and backup point guard problems, it really becomes a tough call. So, and I don't think that the Pistons are going to be stripping stuff down and doing a full rebuild anytime soon, possibly this summer if Van Gundy gets a contract extension, but certainly not coming this month. It's easy to say, but the Pistons have a little bit of momentum this year, so that's a good thing. And if you do a stock report on their assets this season, at least Drummond, Kennard, and Tobias have become strong positives. So at least they're moving in an upward direction if you look at kind of the balance sheet overall. But if the Pistons make a move this year, I think it's going to be of the buying variety, which makes the future even tougher to navigate. But with a strong start and a weak East, I think it's pretty much their only option. But February 8th is coming up. That's the trade deadline. So we should be finding out more soon enough. But LaVar Ball talk coming up next here on Locked On Pistons as Stan Van Gundy has waded into those waters. So it becomes a topic that we're going to be talking about here on this podcast. So beware, talking LaVar up next. So Pistons against the Brooklyn Nets tonight, but we're going to be talking about LaVar Ball a little bit here. I wanted to put this segment at the end of the show in case you wanted to stay LaVar Ball free. Or Twitter troll free as well, so you can stop now and I wouldn't blame you because we're going to get into it a little bit here. Now, on ESPN, I saw this when it came out. I think it might have been early Sunday morning on ESPN.com. I keep odd hours sometimes, so the days kind of run together. But there was a byline story by one of their senior writers, Jeff Goodman, from Lithuania, where the younger Ball brothers are playing with a professional team. I'm sure you've heard about it by now. So Goodman's on the Ball family beat. And he had an interview, exclusive interview, with LaVar saying how Luke Walton, the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, has lost the team. And, of course, you know that Lonzo Ball, the oldest of the Ball sons, he was the second pick of the draft and is the rookie point guard for the Lakers. He's missed a few games as of late, but just came back from injury and has the Lakers in a long losing streak right now, even though he's just returned from that injury. It struck me as kind of odd that Goodman was out over in Lithuania, but it makes sense when you think about it. They get clicks, the Balls do, and we found, you know, it's obviously a story that people care about and people are reading about. So the Lakers were on that 9-game losing streak, and LaVar was saying things like that Luke Walton was too young and kind of kicking the coach while he was down. Then the next day, Lonzo, the player, didn't really do enough to defuse the situation, saying he'd play for anyone, didn't really back his coach. So maybe reading between the lines, it was like, you know, it was LaVar kind of doing more LaVar stuff and getting the spotlight on his own, or is he speaking for Lonzo, or should Lonzo speak up against his dad, or maybe tell his dad to be quiet, although I think that ship has pretty much sailed. But anyway, Rick Carlisle, the coach of the Dallas Mavericks, was apparently the president of the NBA Coaches Association, which I didn't know was a thing. The former Piston coach ripped ESPN in a statement inferring that because ESPN is a league partner with the NBA, that they should not be quoting LaVar because he has no basketball credibility. And I get it. It's true, but I think that toothpaste has been out of the tube for a long time, and you can't really put it back there at this point, and there's no going back now. Of course, LaVar Ball is a sideshow and really shouldn't be quoted, but that's who he is. The more we talk about him, the more he wins. He's kind of a carnival barker. He lives for the limelight. He's like the Donald Trump of sports. And guess what? Those guys, the LaVar Balls, the Donald Trumps, the sideshows, those guys have been doing nonstop advancing and going forward in their endeavors over these past couple years as the media kind of keeps creating these stories about them, giving them the publicity that they desire and need for their agendas to move forward. And that's all they want. So it's all kind of obvious. I'm not breaking any ground here with some of my thoughts on that so far. Meanwhile, Stan Van Gundy before the New Orleans game on Monday says that he won't be doing, because of this article that Goodman wrote and giving LaVar Ball the platform to talk about his problems with Luke Walton, he won't be doing any of the quote-unquote extras for ESPN for the upcoming national TV game that they have next week against the Washington Wizards. That's like the pregame interview with the announcers, where the announcer can kind of get the extra info, plus the in-game interview as well, where the sideline reporter has to talk to a Stan Van Gundy type during a game, and we all know how useless those interviews are anyway. But whoever else the rights holders get that the schlubby newspapers guys don't get is the things that Stan Van Gundy is going to be turning down as far as access. And I say that with love to the schlubby newspaper guys, because I was and still am in my heart a schlubby newspaper guy. But the problem is that this isn't the right hill for guys like Carlisle and Stan Van Gundy to fall down on, to die on. Because, of course, ESPN has the right to cover whatever they want, regardless of what the NBA thinks. But the fact that he went right after a member of the coaching fraternity. And remember, this is Luke Walton. He comes from one of those dynasty basketball families. Also keep in mind that Rick Carlisle played with Bill Walton, Luke's father, with the Boston Celtics. So to threaten access because they are reporting something that coaches don't like and giving LaVar Ball that access and that platform, ironically, it kind of feels a little bit like Donald Trump in the way he handles the media. And those are kind of the tenets that Stan Van Gundy, Greg Popovich, and Steve Kerr, those guys have been talking against that for these past, you know, several months. So in a weird way, Stan is making a stand, as he does, but it's kind of the wrong time to do it. The Walton criticism has kind of been the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of these coaches, and they're fed up with some of this stuff. But there's really no coherent argument in this particular situation to back up the stand that Stan Van Gundy and the coaches are making. But it's still not that huge of a deal. If Stan doesn't honor some of those, you know, credentialed ESPN extra requests and that are part of the ESPN's contract, then he should probably get fined by the league if he doesn't live up to it. And Stan knows that, and that'll likely happen if this is how it all goes down. And then that's that. I mean, the point is proven. Stan went on another one of his crusades, and it's kind of over from there. But what ESPN is doing here now, instead of being introspective about the whole LaVar Ball situation and looking at the bigger picture of the platform that they've given him over time, and they're not the only ones. There's other media outlets that have given it to him as well, and Facebook might be the worst offenders, as the LaVar Ball family show is streamed on Facebook, so it's maybe more their problem than anything else. Now that ESPN's waving the First Amendment around and doing more yelling and screaming about it, it's kind of exacerbating their LaVar Ball problem. They're not really thinking about maybe what they're doing wrong in this and just kind of waving around that thing. So the case in point was on Tuesday, the afternoon show that The Jump on ESPN that's been going on for a few months now. Rachel Nichols, the host of the show, who is great, she kind of ran down the story, and one of the commentators is Amin El Hassan, who used to be in the Phoenix Sun front office. He's a panelist on the show. He's, as Nichols introduces him to give his take on it, he kind of starts stretching and kind of showing off from the bat that this is all an act and a performance that he's about to give. He says, among other things, he says, oh no, we won't be able to talk about the Detroit Pistons in a joking manner. And it's a slight, we all get it, all that ESPN wants to talk about is LeBron and Kyrie and LaVar Ball and the Warriors. So, okay, fine. But then he brings up a graphic of a pie chart that breaks down how ESPN's $1.4 billion deal yearly with the NBA breaks down to 20% of basketball-related revenue for the league, and extrapolates that they're basically paying 20% of Stan Van Gundy's contract. So he should shut up and get in line and do whatever the league asks him to do, which is kind of a reverse of the Stan Van Gundy argument and Rick Carlisle argument in an equally ridiculous and wrong way from the other side. If Stan Van Gundy wants to make a personal choice of protest, you can fine him if you want, but he can still do whatever he wants. Now, and the other thing about it is, you know, saying that ESPN pays his contract so he needs to do whatever he says, it's as if a business deal made between the ESPN and the NBA, which both sides agree to and both sides seem to be doing okay with it, and then another one between the Pistons and Stan Van Gundy where they signed that $35 million five-year deal, like that means he can't take a stand or something. It's a little hypocritical, and to me it sounds like Jerry Jones telling his players not to kneel during the anthem or something like that. So Amin kind of goes on to insult his own network's in-game interviews that all the coaches hate and don't want to do. And I think that kind of proves the opposite point at the end of the day that, yeah, those things are dumb, but you guys are the ones who are requiring coaches to do it. So I don't know how that argument really works out in his favor. And I know at some point during his diatribe on TV, he got to a point where he was basically just kidding. And I know we're just talking hoops and it's all fun, but it's hard to see where the line of seriousness starts in his argument and where does it finish. I just don't know. And then he went full wrestling heel on Twitter later on in the night when some of Detroit's people were starting to give him crap from what he said on television. And he also talked about how he's from the Sudan and that the coaches trying to stifle the First Amendment in the United States about the LaVar Ball reporting is kind of in a comparison to what's going on in Sudan as far as dictators stifling any kind of freedoms down there, not realizing that he's being a little bit hypocritical by the fact that the protest itself could also be construed as some sort of First Amendment argument being made for the other side by the coaches. And I know that he's just trolling and it's just a joke. And he went on to say in Twitter that to one of the Detroit people who was arguing with him about it, he said, "You're just mad because your city is the capital of misery." I could buy your whole block straight cash, homie, but I would rather use that money to hit up White Castle tonight. And again, this is just pretty much he's going full wrestling heel and just joking and doing a Twitter persona at this point. But it's just some of the same tired things we've heard for 40 years in the Detroit area. But I quoted the tweet of his video and put it out there, and I was promoting the podcast, talking about how we're going to talk about how he's wrong on this, just like everyone else is, including Stan Van Gundy and everyone else. And looking back, I guess I kind of fell for the joke a little bit, and maybe still am, by talking about his reaction to it, because it means obviously having some fun with Detroit people with this one. And he responded to me, we did a quote tweet of mine, saying he's not wrong, that he should take a bow about how right he is about all the Detroit stuff. Again, he's basically gone full Rowdy Roddy Piper kind of wrestling heel at this point. But another one of those tweets was about how people are provoking him by responding to it and how they're probably from Rochester or something like that. And I'm a white dude from Royal Oak, so I'm probably part of the problem, I guess, and kind of provoking him. But I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to react in this situation or how I'm supposed to feel about things like this in today's world anymore. And I didn't follow him on Twitter before all of this, so I'm not really familiar with him until I came across all this kind of stuff on Tuesday. And I don't mean that in like a who is that guy kind of way, because in a derogatory sense, because of course he's on ESPN and I'm doing this small podcast from my bedroom here in Chicago. So it's not like I'm not saying I don't know who he is, thumping my chest, because I just honestly didn't know much about his shtick on Twitter or who he is. But looking at it more, I think he's done like some similar, you know, trash talking about the city of Cleveland too, and that people there kind of fell for the troll job a little bit as well. So I guess my point is that isn't this more of what Stan and the coaches and Steve Kerr are talking about in regards to LeVar Ball, the way that Amin is kind of handling this situation? You're basically just being entertainment. You're provoking people for a reaction, and you're being kind of a version of LeVar Ball in some ways. So congratulations, Amin. You've proved your point of going further into the abyss of ESPN creating their own stories, creating their own world, creating their own reality, and kind of going through another day's cycle. And anyways, we just wasted more of everyone's time with this Amin versus Detroit thing. So good job, ESPN, and good job, Amin. And yes, as he pointed out, another tweet of a thing that we could all do after another hour or so of reading his timeline and getting familiar with who he is, I did unfollow him. So I guess I kind of did my part to move on from there. But remember, it is Draft Wednesday, so follow us on draft.com. Join us for the special Lockdown Pistons draft that we're going to do on there as well. Use promo code LOPISTONS when you do sign up, and find me on the app at Matt Shook, the handle there. And follow me there so I can invite you into the Draft Wednesday contest that we're going to have for Wednesday's game. But on Thursday's podcast, we're going to be reviewing the Brooklyn Nets game on the road, which is tonight. And I got another interview later on in this week that I'm excited about. We'll be learning something about Pistons history together. Locked On NBA Network, you can find them on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. And also follow our Facebook page at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H as well. Rate the show on iTunes. Follow us on all of our social media channels. And I appreciate everyone spreading the word to your friends, your Pistons fans' friends as well. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you again soon.